We'll get started. I have some remarks to read. Maybe the last time I read them, so this should be fun. Good evening. My name is Neil Polanski, and I'm a director with Harris County Mud 136. The August 12, 2021 board meeting of Harris County Mud 136 is now called to order. This video conference meeting is being audio recorded per the Texas Open Meeting Regulations and direction from the Texas Attorney General. Members of the public may request to listen to the audio recording of this meeting after conclusion of the meeting, and it will be posted on the district website shortly thereafter. I hope that everyone is staying well during this time. The board is conducting this meeting via video conference to protect the safety of the board members and the public. I'm now going to take a roll call to identify everyone on the call. Please answer present or otherwise indicate that you're here. Roll call of directors, Barry Greer.
Here.
Brent Phelps.
Here.
Adam Rodriguez.
Here.
Eric Worthington.
Present.
Okay, we have a quorum. We'll proceed. Consultants, Fran Matushka.
Here.
Patty Rodriguez.
Here.
Bob Lempe, are you here? Keith Arant?
I'm here.
Jane Mayer?
Here.
Okay. I would now ask for any consultants, members of the public, or participants of this meeting who are not named to clearly state your name for the record.
Members.
Colleen Barrow.
Is there anybody else? Okay, to promote order and avoid confusion, we ask that everyone follow these guidelines. Identify yourself each time before you speak. Conclude your comments with the word pass or otherwise indicate that you are finished to pass the conversation back to the group. And public comments will be limited to 3 minutes at the discretion of the board. We'll now move on to the first item on the agenda. The posted agenda, and that is public comments.
Yes, this is Glenn Summers.
Yes.
I wanted to thank you for updating the June minutes to accurately reflect what I said. Second, just since I seem to be coming to these meetings, I'd appreciate it if you guys could use the correct spelling of my last name. It's not S-U-M-M-E-R-S, but it's S-O-M-M-E-R-S, and you should have seen that on some of the emails that I sent. Third is earlier this week I submitted a request on behalf of the Deerfield Village Community Association and Security Committee for your reconsideration of the donation to DVC for security enhancement services. I had brought it up at the board meeting, and the board had given me authority to send that note to you, which is why I copied Eric on it as well. This was for video surveillance of Deerfield areas, license plate readers in the entrances, mud facilities. And it's a follow-on to the donation you were going to give to us, but then rescinded last month because SEAL does not do law enforcement services like being able to arrest someone. And we had actually in the security committee had started to look at other ways to use that money, which I think would fit the requests that or fit your requirements, as I believe they've been done by other MUD. From what my understanding and doing some research, that other MUDs have allowed and have supported those type of efforts. Anyhow, I understand, Neil, that you came back with a request must come from the DVCA board, which will happen. I've forwarded that on to Eric, and I've had it put on the agenda, so we'll work on getting a formal request to you from the board. But I guess I'm still confused, and it's kind of taking us back to a question I asked 2 months ago, and that is, what is your process? And I asked that in the question yesterday, 2 months ago in June. I had asked, I've had a reasonable experience with the MUD over the years, and it seems in the last number of months I've come up with things that I've seen that are different than what you've been doing in the past. So the question is, do you have a formal process as to how requests like this work? Is that written down? Or how does that work? Because it seems to be a moving target.
So it's not really a moving target, and I'll answer your question, Glenn. How we're going to handle this request is it needs to come directly from the Deerfield Village Community Association Board of Directors, and it'll be transmitted to us, or it would be transmitted to us by the president of the board of directors, Eric Toure. And if there is a request for funding from the MUD, it would have to be specific, and it would be a line item request for everything that needs to be done. We just simply won't consider a request that is general in nature. That's not the way we've done it in the past. We need to have a communication directly from the Deerfield board.
Okay,
not from a committee.
Got it. I understand. That's fine. You have accepted requests from committees in the past, but apparently you're formalizing that to say you don't anymore. And I'm okay with that. I mean, there's no rush on any of this. We can.
Thank you very much for that.
I guess what we're a little bit concerned is that you were going to just give a general donation to Deerfield for security services, and now you say it has to be a line item request. And the security services of $80,000 that you were going to give a donation to never had a request. So
okay.
I just want to highlight that as being an inconsistency, Neil. But we'll work within your process.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Are there any additional public comments at this time?
And this is Holly Barrett. I'm sorry, Glenn, I usually agree with you on many things, but this one I think you need to be reminded of the basics, too. You need to look at what the purpose of a special taxing district like this really is. It's to provide basic services that are just too difficult for regular homeowners to provide for ourselves, like water, sewer, and trash. The tax to collect is supposed to be just to provide that service in a safe and efficient manner. It's not supposed to be for profit. But this fits the act goes right out the truth. While so many are struggling, we find out that you've been overcharging us in taxes or service fees so much that you've got tens of thousands of dollars, not just in reserve for disasters, but just sitting around waiting for y'all to donate it to the cause of your choice. As a conservative, I find that this is depressing as the millions and trillions I see being thrown away in Washington. Because some people you've been overcharging are going to have their water turned off. Just so you have extra funds to donate to make yourself feel good. Can I like to remind you that money that this MUD has in the bank is not your money. The money belongs to the people that paid their taxes and paid their fees. The extra money you have needs to go back to those people that you overcharge. I suggest you divide that extra $85,000 that you have available to donate by the number of customers that are in this MUD, and credit everybody that amount. Each account would get credit at that amount. And as you prepare to set your new tax rate in the next couple of months, keep in mind that the homes that are on your shutoff list, and ask yourselves, is the money that we are going to be taxing those people is something we really need to provide the service, or is it simply extra money that we want to have around so we can spend it on the project of our choice? Thanks so much for listening, and I pass back to you.
Okay, thank you, Colleen. We appreciate your comments.
Neil, may I interject?
Yes, sir.
This is Eric Worthington, director of MUD 136. I just want to point out that Mr. Summers' comments about Eric, he was referring to Eric Toure and not myself in his communications, just
absolutely.
To make sure that that's the
minutes
are correct.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Eric. I should have been more careful on that. I apologize.
Not a problem. I just wanted to put a point of clarification in. No offense taken.
Okay. Any additional public comments? Okay. Hearing none, the public does have the ability to interject at any time if they have somebody, if anybody has something to add, or they have questions or comments or concerns throughout the agenda. That's how we operate. People have the option of talking to us within reason. The next item on the agenda is approving the minutes of the meetings of June 10 and July 8. We'll take those as two separate items. The revision of the minutes of June 10th has been circulated to the board. Do I hear a motion to approve?
Adam makes a motion. Eric seconds.
Okay. We have a motion and second on the minutes for June 10th. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, I'll take a roll of the directors. Myself, I vote yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps?
Yes.
Adam Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. The minutes are approved. Next, we have the minutes of the July 8th, 2021 meeting. Have you all had an opportunity to look at those? If so, do I hear a motion to approve?
This is Barry. I make the motion to approve the minutes, July 8th.
Okay, we have a motion to approve. Do I hear a second?
This is Brant. I second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, I'll take a roll on the item. Director Polanski votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps?
Yes.
Adam Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries 5-0. Thank you for the approved. Agenda item number 3 is the bookkeeper's report, investment report, and authorized payment of bills. Fran, you're up.
Okay. This is Fran Matushka. You've got your bookkeeping report there in front of you. You can see the bottom line balances. Your general fund will have $656,000 after we pay bills tonight, and your capital improvement fund, $1.19 million. You'll not see your last, but the tax pool average rate for July is up ever so slightly from the prior month, 0.0189. The second page will recap your July cash activities. $89,157 went into your general fund. That does include a small dividend from your insurance carrier, $185. And the checks listed there are the disbursements y'all did approve at last month's meeting. Page 3 is just basically a listing of those checks we're asking for approval of tonight. We show a total of $173,515.85. Really nothing terribly out of the ordinary in that group of checks. I guess the most unique being the one to AWBD, and that is Director Phelps PFI, your Public Funds Investment Act training. We have 10 customer deposit refunds tonight, and then one check that does not appear on your report. In today's mail, we did receive the invoicing from Direct Energy. So we have written check number 10529 in the amount of $2,571.11, so that y'all did not have to sign a blank check since we had the invoicing prior to the meeting. Page 4, I have your 3-month budget to actual. You see the variance on the revenue, almost $52,000 ahead of what we had anticipated through the first 3 months of this budget year. You see that's kind of the difference between the tap connection fee, which for the elementary school, which was not contemplated when this budget was drafted. And then the West Harris County fee is at this point in time about $26,000 under what we had budgeted. You can see that correlates to the expenses for your West Harris County water, which is also selling running under. And then, of course, the line item we had for your special project, which, of course, nothing has been charged to. And so that results in your expenditures running about $24,500 under what we had budgeted through the 3 months. Excess revenue is $30,773 through this point in time. Page 5, we've taken those same year-to-date actual numbers, broken them out into your sewer, water, and other components, and so you can see you know, what those result in as far as excess revenue or expenditures. The final page is your quarterly investment report, and that is in your package of items defined for Director Phelps. Also, just to hand these checks, and we'll hand this packet over to Barry a little bit before the meeting. If you have the checks, the quarterly investment report for Director Phelps, and then we talked last month about signature cards for the account that we are opening for your checking account over at Central Bank. So those signature cards are included in that packet as well. And if y'all, when y'all get it, have any questions about where you need to sign, just give me a call or text me, and I will try to walk you through it. And I believe that's all I have for the board tonight, unless y'all have any questions for me.
Fran, when we get to the investment policy, do we handle that as part of this line item, or is that another agenda item?
That will be another agenda item, the investment policy, and legal will take the lead on that.
Okay. All right. Are there any comments or questions on the bookkeeper's report?
I have one, and that is from what Dimitri had said last month, where the fees for the fence contract, I don't know if that had been billed or not. I just don't see a line item in there. Did those get deleted before they were billed?
I'm sorry, which, the legal fees?
The legal fees around the fence project that were then rescinded last month by the legal firm.
They were eliminated from the billing before the billing was submitted for payment.
Got it. Thank you. That's why I don't see it.
On page 5. Under professional fees.
Oh, professional fees, not legal.
Right. So it would just be general legal fees. And like I said, any costs associated with the fence project were eliminated before the billing was issued.
Right, so you never got a bill, and so there was no refund.
It was never processed.
It never existed for all practical purposes.
It was never processed, that's correct.
Yep. Got it, thank you.
That's our understanding. This is Neil. That's our understanding as to how this was going to be handled.
Yep, I appreciate it.
Okay, any other questions or comments on bookkeeper's report? Do I hear a motion to approve?
This is Eric. I'll make the motion.
Barry, I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll on the bookkeeper's report. Director Polanski votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Grant Phelps?
Yes.
Adam Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries 5-0. Bookkeeper's report is approved. Thank you, Fran. We appreciate it. Tax Assessor Collector's report. Patty, are you there?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. This is Patty. You should have your tax report hopefully in front of you or on your screen. The first page reflects your taxes receivable left at the end of July at $11,023.39. The following page reflects your activity for the month. You had receipts totaling $631.27, and you had disbursements totaling $2,196.98, leaving you with $22,221.16 in your tax account at the end of the month. On the following page, you'll see one check listed for approval today, totaling $1,894.96, and once cleared, will leave $20,326.20. Well, I'm actually holding that check until next month. I didn't want to spend money on sending FedEx for one check, so we'll just hold that one until next month, and if we meet in person, I'll bring it with me, or if we do a hybrid, I will send it with my next month's check. The following page 4, for 2020, you're at 99.45% collected thus far, and you are 99% or better for all prior years. And you were about 99% also this time last year, so you're pretty much in line as far as your collections go. Page 5 has your taxable values listed for 2020 and all prior years. Your tax rates are shown, and your adjusted levies on the right. Next page has the breakout components of your tax rate. For you guys, it's all under general fund maintenance tax. Page 7 and 8, nothing to report, just notes and historical information. Page 9, we have one account we're keeping track of that is on a payment plan, and they did pay timely. And then the last page for your review is the short delinquent list of the taxpayers left that have not paid their taxes. And that is all I have, unless you have any questions.
Patty, are we at the certified roll yet?
We did receive notice from the appraisal district that they certified the rolls on August 6th, but it takes them 2 weeks to get that data to us. So they're anticipating the 20th, and then once we get them, we need to upload and get them going and balanced so that we can send them out to all the financial advisors. So we probably won't be ready to do anything until the week of the 23rd.
What is our anticipated change over the current fiscal year percent?
So the appraisal district does have to send what they call an estimate letter. And for 136, we received the estimate at $267,639,577. Slightly above where the 2020 value is at 252.6. So that should be what it comes in at, or close to 267.6 million. They're supposed to send us the estimate of what they think that it will certify at, so it should be pretty close.
Patty, do we still believe that that the valuation in our district as well as others will be going up appreciably in the next few years?
With the way the market is, I would anticipate so. It doesn't look like it's causing it's slowing down. It's still pretty crazy the way the market's out there. Our houses are selling. There's not enough inventory. They're selling above market value, above asking price. So I anticipate that, yes, we will probably see increases. But, again, with the pandemic, I don't know what the appraisal district is going to do with all that. And then, obviously, it didn't affect your 2021 value, so.
Right. And we'll take whatever steps are necessary to adjust the tax rate one way or the other, depending on what the certified value comes in subsequent years. So the board has been very sensitive to that in the past and will continue to be. Are there any questions or comments regarding the tax such collectors report?
Hey, Neil, it's Glenn.
Yes, Glenn.
How does the tax exemptions, is that something set by you, the homestead, the over 65 and disabled? Is that set by the state or is that set by the Mud 136?
No. The individual tax exemption is decided by the district. Okay. What the parameters are for deciding the exemption is in my understanding, is the parameters are set by the state of Texas. Is that correct, Patty?
Yes, that is correct. So the board of the district elects the exemptions every year for that tax year. So for 2021, they've elected a $20,000 exemption for over 65 and disabled. And that was done earlier this year. We send that to the appraisal district so that the appraisal district has that information before they send out all the valuation notices.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay, are there any other questions or comments regarding the tax assessor collector's report? Hearing none, I'll call a roll on the item. Director Polanski votes yes. Did I get a motion and second on that?
No, we need to have a motion.
Okay. Okay.
All right, I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
Okay, I thought I went to discussion, but I must be, out to lunch or something. Okay, we have a motion and second. Any additional discussion? Hearing none, I will now take a roll on the item. Director Polanski votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps?
Yes.
Adam Rodriguez?
Yes.
Chair Worthington?
Yes.
Okay, the item passes 5-0. The tax filter collector's report is approved. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Patty.
You're welcome. Thank you all.
Patty, while you're do you have item number 5, Patty?
Yeah, we talked about this last month about changing the tax account from Wells Fargo to Allegiance because of the fees they're imposing. So we got it on the agenda this month to discuss and approve the depository pledge agreement and get the bank open. And then next month I'll bring the, or I'll send the signature cards for signature. If the board is in agreement to get this account closed and get the Allegiance Bank opened.
So will the materials that the directors are provided include signature cards?
Next month, yes. So once we get the DPA approved today and we get the account open, the bank will send out the signature cards. We'll bring them to your next meeting or send them with March checks, whichever you decide to do for next month's meeting. And then you'll sign that, and then we can finally close up Wells Fargo and transfer your funds over to Allegiance and then move forward from there.
Okay. So is there any formal action required from us tonight?
Yes, so the depository pledge agreement. Jane, do you have those for signature for them tonight?
I was just going to ask how many copies do we need, Patty, and then I can FedEx that out tomorrow if that works for the directors.
We need one for us, one for the bank, and one for you. So
okay.
I think three originals, yeah.
Okay. So the signature copies will be provided to us, or they will be emailed to us?
The signature copies, I can do either or. If you want, I can do physical signature cards at your next meeting. Or if you want, we can do e-sign, and that can happen between meetings. They'll send you an email with a login and code, and then they'll send you a second email where you actually click a link and you put your name in there with your code. And that's all they need for signing. But it's up to you. We were asking more for the e-signing when we knew we weren't going to be meeting in person for a while. But since it looks like y'all are going to meet next month, and we could do paper, whichever the board prefers. As long as we have valid email addresses, we can do the e-signing. But if the board prefers the physical paper signature card, we can bring those next month.
This is Neil. What is the board? What is the board's preference on this?
This is Barry. My preference is to sign them in the meeting next month.
Adam, I prefer paper.
Okay, we'll go ahead and do it. Do you need any additional authorization from us, or is that all going to come via our signatures next month?
The only thing today that's on the agenda, I believe, is just to approve that depository pledge agreement that Jane will send up to you overnight, and that I think require just the president and the secretary. Is that correct, Jane?
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah. So it just the depository pledge agreement just requires two signatures, a president and secretary.
Okay. So we need a motion to approve the depository pledge agreement.
That's right.
Okay. Do I hear a motion?
Adam makes a motion.
I was going to say, let me repeat that again, please. All right. Do I hear a second?
I hear a second.
Okay. We have a motion and second. Any discussion? Okay. I'll take a roll on the item. Director Polanski votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps?
Yes.
Adam Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Motion carries 5-0. We approve the DPA.
Awesome. Thank you all.
Let me ask, this is not an agenda item. I'm just going to ask this before Patty, before you and Fran specifically leave the meeting. Are you all planning to attend physical meetings beginning, starting after September 1?
I've had most of my boards have decided after September because of the exemption being removed by the governor. Most of my boards have decided to start meeting in person after September. There are a lot of them are allowing a dial-in number in case a consultant, is exposed or doesn't feel well or has to isolate. They can still call into the meeting, or in case any residents want to call in. But you know, it just depends on you. If you feel like you're okay with us being there, and you know, there's enough social distancing, or it depends on what you want. I'm willing to come in person. I'll be masked up, but I'll be there.
And this is Fran Matushka, and I am intending to go to all the in-person meetings I can, just for ease of signatures, unless requested otherwise.
Okay, this is Neil. I appreciate your feedback. We, as a board, will be discussing this item as agenda item number 16. So we'll be talking about this, but I wanted to get your feedback before you left the meeting. Thank you very much. Agenda item number 6, reviewing the investment policy and accepted related party disclosures.
Jane, so this is a yearly item. Just reminding you guys, we have an investment policy. We don't have any recommended changes this year to it. And the bookkeeper provided the updated broker's list. And I also received the disclosure statement from Fran and Brent as the bookkeeper and investment officer. So all I need is a motion to just approve your investment policy.
Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve the investment policy executed for this meeting?
Adam makes a motion.
Brinkel second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Okay. I'll take a roll on the item. Director Polanski votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps?
Yes.
M. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington?
Yes.
Okay, the item passes 5-0. Thank you very much, everybody. We have an updated, or not updated, but we have an investment policy. Thank you very much, Jane, about that. And item number 7, engineer's report. Bob Lumpy, are you there?
Yeah, Neil, yes, I am. I'm sorry. I had a 5 o'clock meeting that ran a little bit late, so I dialed in just a little bit past 6, but I am here. Did not have a written report. This really, the two topics to discuss, one, the status of our water plant walkthrough. We do have a change order submitted by the contractor for a couple of items to be added in out there, and I'm working through that with Brent and Barry. Just sent out an email yesterday to them, and hopefully we get that squared away. And Brent and Barry, I'm fine to open up a discussion tonight on that, on what I sent, or we can do that separately via email or a conference call tomorrow or whenever is convenient for you two. And I'll leave that up to you all to make that decision. So what would you prefer to do?
Can we get a summary of it?
Yeah, well, so there was two components. There's the low-level alarm that needs to be added in, and there is a three-phase failure alarm that needs to be added in. And so we've got pricing on both of those items. One of them is strictly through a subcontractor to the contractor. AJI is our contractor. ACE is the subcontractor to them that does a lot of the programming. And Brent had thought maybe we should contract directly through ACE on one of those items. And we did get a quote from them, and we were cleared by the contractor that they're fine to let us contract directly with that contractor. It was $6,800, I think, to add that in. The other item, the phase fail alarm, was going to go through through AJI. And we got a price. Actually, I'm mobile right now, so I don't have that in front of me, but I think it was roughly $4,100, something like that. And so we've got the pricing tied down. There was just a couple of questions we were working through with Brent and Barry on some details there. But the pricing is there. AJI is ready to move. They've got a big project coming up. Actually, they've kind of started on it, so they're anxious to close out a lot of their jobs that they've got going on. So they're motivated to get out there and get these items addressed. I just need to make sure that that Brent and Barry are happy with the discussions that we've had and the email that I sent out. So
then a third item was the electrical outlets at the sight glasses on the hydromatic tanks. Is that work complete?
No, it's not. But I think they just want to mobilize one time. But I saw Barry's email from yesterday, and I did send a reply back that they're taking care of that, on their at their own cost. That's not a cost to the district, but those outlets will be added back in. And so I think they were just trying to get all of that so they don't have to mobilize, demobilize, and remobilize to take care of these other items, but they will take care of that, Brent.
Okay. We have, this is not actually part of the engineering. I'm not actually sure how to do this. The next agenda item was receiving the report from the subcommittee to review the water plant control building. Are we at a point where we're ready to consider that report, or do you guys need some more time?
We need more time. We haven't completed the report.
Yeah, Brent and I need to, since we've both had some health issues in the last 6 weeks or so, I guess we need to get back together again and try to come to some conclusions or whatnot.
Okay, that's fine. We have also had some, Bob, I'd just like you to hang around when we talk about operations. We're going to talk about the issue behind the 3922 Heather Sage, and yeah. I'd like you to sort of fill in the board on what your take is on that.
Okay.
We're like two agenda items away from that.
That's no problem at all.
Okay. Agenda item number 9, the Jackrabbit Road PUD matters to take appropriate action. Did anybody attend the Jackrabbit meeting?
Yes, this is Eric. I did. I spoke with Brent, and he decided he wasn't going to go, so I popped over. I enjoy attending these meetings because I tend to learn a lot just in as much as I do in our own meetings. As it turns out, we missed one of their meetings last month because it was off cycle due to the calendar, but they had a facility tour that I was unaware of that we missed out on. For the most part, they are running basically status quo. Their meeting was done in 45 minutes. They did say that any new contracts that involve bids over $100,000 or have staffing over 10 employees have some new caveats that they have to sign off on, which I'm assuming we would do as well. We don't have many projects going on at the moment. So it's really not an issue. It's just if we sign a contract, the state has proposed new regulations on if we send projects out to bid, anyone that bids has to certify that they are not boycotting the gun industry or the energy industry in any way, and they must not be funding terrorists or the boycotting Israel. So these are new state laws that come in. Again, it really doesn't impact us. Our water project, our plant project, should hopefully end within the next 30 days. That would be fantastic. But if we issue new contracts in the future, the state has imposed new requirements for any bids for public consideration. The rest is pretty much status quo. They're still trying to get that Citgo plot plotted, and that's about it. It was a pretty quick meeting. They don't have anything major going on. Just like us, they are working for emergency processes to make sure that their backup generators are all 100% functional. They have all the replacement parts they need. In their specific instance, they had a specific type of fuse that blew. The only replacements were in Dallas, and it took them a week to get that in. Now they have two backup sets of everything. So just like with Keith and with our operator, we just need to make sure that we have backup parts on hand in case something goes wrong, because we can't have another freeze or hurricane issue knock us out of commission again.
Well, they in person, Eric?
They have been in person for several months. I didn't go last month, and I don't think Brent did due to his procedure, but I think Brent went at least one time before that. They have been in person now. They are not doing anything remote. They do not have any type of option to call in. They are as it was pre-pandemic.
Yeah, they've been doing that for about 4 months. I think I went to two meetings and then didn't go to the last two.
That sounds about right.
And I was there when they talked about the facility tour, and we were not invited. I mean, I actually mentioned something, and that was for their board only.
Oh, okay. All right. They didn't clarify that.
They offered, that they will work with us if we want to do a tour, but that one was for their board. They have a couple new members.
Okay. I've never done a tour of that plant. I would be very interested in doing one.
Yeah, their guy, Adam, the operator, we just need to reach out or have Keith reach out and schedule that. Because I asked them 2 months ago.
Yeah, Eric, you should take a tour of that.
I would be interested. And I don't know if Adam has ever done one, but it's not pleasant, but they're working on a lot of overhauls. It's an older plant, so they're going through a lot of upgrades, and just, parts wear out, tanks wear out, so they're doing a lot of upgrades and whatnot. And their plant and their water plant is much bigger than what we have. They serve a much larger area and customers. So it's just very interesting to go in and listen, because I pick up things every single time.
We appreciate you going to those meetings, Eric, either virtually or otherwise. We thank you. Obviously, we don't have the ability to see their water facilities, because we're not a partner in their water facility. We're a partner in the sewer, in the sewage treatment plant. So I think it's very important that we try to schedule, see if they are amenable to schedule a walkthrough of the sewage treatment plant, the wastewater treatment plant. It's been several years since we've done that, and we've got two new directors as well. So, Keith, if you're on the call, if you can communicate with their operator to see if it's possible to have some kind of a open house walkthrough of their wastewater treatment plant, we'd appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Sure will.
Okay. All right. Eric, was there any discussion of the flood wall?
There was. They're working with their German. Hold on. Let me see. That did come up. They are. All right. So that was item A, and they are working on their flood wall. The drawing. I'll just read it real quick. The drawings have been revised according to IBS, which is the flood wall company, recommendations, and return to IBS for review. So they haven't, to my understanding, have not started building anything yet. And Harvey was what, 2017? So they are continuing to work on design plans, and it was mentioned that there is a little bit of a communication problem due to languages or they're German. So they're working on it, and they're continuing to progress, but it was, I mean, their meeting was 45 minutes, so it was just what I read for item AI, and that was it.
So they had postponed bidding that because Eric Miller told them the bid prices would be very high right now, and they're hoping to wait 6-8 months to bid it, knowing it wouldn't be done before this hurricane season anyway. I mean, they're afraid that it'll break the budget if they bid it now. So they're postponing the bidding.
Okay, that makes sense because that wasn't mentioned. They just said they're working through some design issues. And they're continuing to work on cleaning out several of their aeration basins, which apply to us for sewer. And they're repairing some leaking air piping. So, again, it's just maintenance issues, and they're doing kind of a major overhaul on the sewer side of things.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Eric. The one thing that we do need to sort of keep track of is where we are as far as their CIP is concerned. Don't they have a CIP that goes out, like, if I'm not mistaken, Bob, you can correct me, it goes out 20 years? Bob, Wimpy? Okay. Anyway, we need to know kind of what we're on the hook for at least a year in advance. I know the first few years of their CIP, the costs weren't very significant, but as their plant ages, the CIP and the replacement cost for all the member districts is going to go up accordingly. So. Whereas it might be relatively affordable right now for us, it might change quite a bit. I don't have their CIP in front of me.
I think you're right, Neil. It was 20-year forecast.
Yeah, sorry. Neil, this is Bob. Sorry. I was trying to unmute, and I hit hung up instead. But it does go out like 20 years. And we did, I reached out to Sander Engineering a couple of months ago, and I can resend it to everybody. It hasn't been updated. I mean, whatever they sent us back in the day is still the same, but it does go out to several years, and I can certainly resend that to everyone if y'all want it.
It's probably not a bad idea to send it out.
Okay.
Reminder to us as to what
sure.
what our anticipated share of any CIP improvements are. And of course, a CIP improvement is not the same as an emergency replacement, which could always come up as it does, as it bites us occasionally. So
okay.
It would be a good idea
yeah.
for the
CIP. Yeah. I'll send it to you, and I'll copy Fran so she's got it on her radar screen too that she can build that in. But I'll send that out to you guys tomorrow.
Thank you, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Operations report, Keith.
All righty. Good evening. Again, Keith Durant with Municipal Operations. Should have the July report there in front of you. So you had 1,079 connections, 9 of those being vacant. Give me just a second here. I'm sorry. Received 89,228.09 in revenue. Your well produced right at 2.5 million gallons. Received 10.1 million from the authority, totaling 12.692 million gallons. Billed out 12.482 million gallons to your customers, accounting for 98% of the water. Beneath that is your aid receivables. Pretty good shape with the bulk of that being current and 30-day. We did have one leak repaired in the district. We took the 4 bacteriological samples as required per the GCQ, and those results were good. If you scroll down to the following page, towards the bottom there, for the period ending July 5th, again, we show your gallons produced from the well and received from the authority, and then out to the right, you see that same 98% accountability. Beneath that's just the graph showing your production and accountability from 2020 to 2021. Scroll down to the following page. To the right there is a summary of our invoice, along with the invoices sent to your bookkeeper for direct payment. Our expense this month, obviously, significantly higher than where we are typically, and that's the product of that TAP that was discussed during the bookkeeping report. If you scroll to the following page, that is your commercial usage listing. Not really a whole lot to report on there. Obviously, as we continue to move into the thick of summer, we've kind of hit a dry spell. Obviously, we anticipate to see consumption kind of continuing to increase. Trade following that is the monthly log sheet there at the water plant for the calendar month of July. So again, we're showing you the well production in thousands of gallons. And then to the right of that, the very far right, is surface water received, again, for the calendar month of July. Scroll down to the following page. That is your delinquent list. And I apologize, I don't remember if we had this discussion last month or not, but I'll remind you all. So this list looks a little bit different than what you guys are used to seeing in months past. One of the items similar to what Eric was mentioning in regards to certain contract requirements as to boycotting Ariel and so on and so forth. In the most recent legislative session, there was a bill that was passed. I believe it's House Bill 872 that addresses customer confidentiality. As such, kind of across the board, what we've done is we've redacted certain information from this list that contains customer information just so that information is not discoverable via a public information request that would potentially be confidential. Certainly, if you all have any specific questions about any particular account, feel free to let me know. You know, my intent, once we get back to meeting in person, is to provide you guys with the normal list that you're used to seeing. And then, as a separate report, not attached to my written report, and then, you know, taking those up, at the end of the meeting, just again for y'all's review.
I have a question. Does the new state law regarding customer confidentiality apply just to the cutoff list, or does it apply to any discussion of individual customers during the meetings?
My understanding is that, you know, if I was to have a request or a particular account that was to be discussed, you know, in the meeting, you know, we're not going to give you the name, the account number, the service address, you know, but we're not going to include all the information that would have been previously included on our cutoff list or our delinquent list. But, you know, we would still reference, you know, the account number or, you know, so I mean, we're still going to provide identifying information that's specific to the MUG, that really is just a number that means something to us, but, you know, certainly this is kind of a work in progress. This is, you know, this is kind of the first step in an effort to comply with the new law. I think, you know, as time progresses, the operations community will certainly begin to get a better feel for how, you know, situations such as that are to be handled.
Well, the reason I ask is because, you know, quite often we'll refer to, I mean, we have an issue right now with a customer that has a very large bill in the patio homes that we have been talking about for several months now. And you've had customer communication, you've had discussions between MOC and the customer, and, you know, it's like, can we continue to discuss that kind of thing, or is that now forbidden?
To my knowledge, I think that we're certainly okay, and Jane, certainly you correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, to my knowledge, I think we're certainly okay to continue to discuss that, you know, the ongoing dealings with, you know, with that specific account in terms of service address or, you know, so on and so forth. But, you know, obviously, again, I think that the primary focus, Neil, is that if I have written correspondence from that customer or any other customer that it's not included in my report, that then becomes a part of your minutes that if someone was to request for a copy of my report via the Texas Open records request, that, you know, that, that all of this information is sent to whomever asks, that contains customers, you know, service addresses, names, account numbers, status of their accounts, so on and so forth.
But this is Neil again. Is customer correspondence to us for any purpose whatsoever part of the public record?
I believe, you know, if we were to look back at the minutes, and I've not done this, but I'm making the assumption that if we were to look back at the minutes over the last several months as we discussed the particular account there in the patio homes, that, you know, that nothing's going to be crafted in such a way that it's going to provide, you know, any sort of information that I wouldn't already provide in my written report.
Okay. Jane, if you're there, this may be the kind of thing where the board, I mean, this sounds like a prime topic for an AWBB workshop, that's for sure, because, you know, if they're going to change the format and change the requirements for boards as to what they can and what they can't discuss and what is and what is not appropriate in consultant reports, I mean, we need to know all this. It's very important that we know the parameters under which we can discuss a particular account. If our hands are tied, you know, it's like, how do we transact our business if we can't refer to specific accounts? So maybe I'm reading a little bit more into this than is necessary, but Jane, if you can, like, kind of run that by Dimitri and ask him whether or not we need kind of a briefing as well as a consultant.
This is Jane. Yeah, typically, at least to my knowledge right now, we have a group of lawyers that I think are working on a bunch of summaries and memos regarding all the legislative updates. So I'll talk to him about when he thinks that would be available, because once we get that done, then we typically will, during our meetings, give that to you all and kind of go through what's changed.
Well, this is Barry. That's going to also apply to the tax assessor collector's reports, because they've got names and addresses and accounts and all that.
Absolutely.
And they have not changed their proceedings.
And this is Keith. I'm happy to, you know, again, our intent isn't to, you know, make this any more difficult than it needs to be. This was, again, kind of a industry, you know, to my understanding, that there was I was a part of a conference call with pretty well every operator in town discussing this very bill, and this was kind of, I believe, the consensus. I think that if you were to go to Jackrabbit's meeting, you're probably going to hear something similar. But you know, let me also visit with some folks on my end, and certainly, you know, again, the intent here isn't, you know, I'm perfectly fine to leave things how they were, but at the same time, I want to make sure that we do our part to comply with whatever law that does apply to Med 136.
No, and this is Neil. I'm not criticizing or coming down on you, Keith, or MOC in regards to this. I'm just saying, you know, if there is customer information that is no longer to be available in a consultant report or to be discussed during a meeting, we need to be briefed on that. And it wouldn't be Keith, it wouldn't be Patty, it would be, I don't even know if this kind of thing would apply to putting somebody's deposit refund in the bookkeeper's report, you know, because we list people's names and addresses. So I'd kind of like to know where the line is drawn on this from an operational and administrative standpoint. And it's not, doesn't have to do with you, Keith. It's just you kind of are the tip of the iceberg here.
Yes, sir. No problem at all. If there's no other conversation on that, just a couple of other items that I wanted to touch on. And Neil had sent an email prior to the meeting, just kind of asking for an update on a few kind of pending items or just items that have been previously discussed in months past. And so I'll just run through that briefly just so that everyone's on the same page. One being the work that's being done by the Water Authority, West Harris County Regional Water Authority, within the boundary of MUD 136. Obviously, there's lots going on out there. You know, our office, our field staff, myself, we've been in communication with those folks. No issues to report specific to 136. To my knowledge, I believe any sort of crossing that would, or waterline crossing or utility crossing that of anything that's owned and operated by the district is done and complete with no issue. And so I don't anticipate any issues on a go-forward basis specific to that work as it's completed, again, within the boundaries of 136. If that changes, I'll certainly provide you all an update. The second item was related to the home there in off of Heather Sage that Neil alluded to earlier. If you guys recall, over the last few months, there's been discussions about that particular account. It had a very large balance as a result of consumption that occurred during the freeze. We all presented kind of their ask, the request to you guys. You know, there's still been no documentation or anything provided to us that would indicate that there was a leak or that there was any type of repair made. There's been no explanation for the consumption. As I mentioned in prior months, just as a reminder, you know, obviously, you know, the only tool that we have at our disposal to quantify the number of water or the number of gallons that are consumed by any given home is the meter that's in the ground. We've gone back on several occasions. We verified that the meter was accurate, the read was accurate. We pulled the meter. We sent it off. We had it tested. It came back fine. So, again, everything on the district's end, at least up until this point, appears to have checked out. I did correspond with the customer following our last meeting that the balance is owed. Obviously, the customer was in disagreement. As it stands currently, you know, no payment has been made. There is a new account holder at that given address, and their account is current. Payments are being made there. And again, if anything changes on that end, I will let you all know. The Pine Forest gravity line, so as you guys recall, again, over the last few months, there's been conversations about kind of revisiting the timing of when is the most appropriate or prudent for the district to address that line. Obviously, there's no sanitary sewer line that's not important, but that one in particular is extremely critical given that 100% of the sanitary sewer from 136 is conveyed through that 18-inch gravity line. So should there be a collapse or a failure or a break, that becomes very problematic for the district. We did have the line televised and inspected. We've kind of re-reviewed what we've seen. I was working to get a couple of numbers for, you know, again, there's a couple different ways that these lines can be repaired as they age. You can do what's called pipe bursting, which is what we did on that small section of that same line that actually did collapse just following Harvey. Pipe bursting is essentially where you fuse together you know, HDPE pipe, you fuse that to a hammer, and as it is pulled through the existing line, it breaks the existing line and then immediately pulls a new line in behind it. The other common method used to rehab a gravity sanitary sewer line is what's called CIPP, which is cured in place piping. Essentially, it's a resin sock that's pulled through the main. You hit it with steam, that sock swells to the existing pipe and adheres, and so essentially you have a new coat or a new interior of that existing line. In order for that to be a viable option, it requires really that there's a hose pipe that's in decent condition, which is the case currently based on everything that we've seen, based upon the inspections performed thus far of that gravity line. So, as I mentioned, I was working to try to get a couple of numbers. I did get one number to line that line with the CIPP. The first estimate that I received was for $160,000. And that's for roughly 1,600, a little over 1,600 linear feet of that 18-inch line. And so that would essentially, in theory, have a, you know, you'd have a kind of a new, you know, a new lease on life, if you will, for that 18-inch gravity line all the way to its point of discharge at the Jackrabbit sewer plant.
Hey, Keith, this is Eric real quick. If we went through what you just described, do you have any data on the lifespan of how long that would be good for before eventually the whole thing has to be dug up and replaced?
And that's an excellent question. You know, I think, you know, everything that I've heard, Eric, you know, is, you know, when you line that pipe, you know, it's not a temporary fix. I mean, I think we could expect to get, you know, 15 plus years out of a liner. I think a prudent conversation to have would be obviously one with the installer, but then also try to do some other work. I can visit with Bob and then also reach out to some other contractors and folks that I've worked with that have done these types of jobs and kind of, you know, pick their brain a little bit in regards to that as well, just to ensure that what we're spending money on is a long-term solution and not anything temporary. But that's certainly my understanding, is that, you know, there's a fairly significant shelf life on that pipe once you line it.
All right, that's fine. I mean, my big concern is, you know, we have a 50-year-old correct system, so at some point, items are going to have to be dug up and replaced. But if we can get 15 years, that gives us planning time to get an estimate for what a complete replacement would be and budget for it. So that number doesn't scare me all that much if it buys us 15 years, because that gives us time to properly plan and budget for a complete overhaul. So I like that idea. And if the existing pipe can handle, that gravity line can handle this process, I'm very much in favor of it.
And let me just add that, you know, given the and Bob, I'm not sure if you're still on the call, but given the you know, first estimate, and obviously I anticipated that it would at least be over that $75,000 threshold, you know, and by rule, this job's really something that would have to be publicly advertised and bid. So, you know, this isn't something, you know, if y'all told me to go today, you know, there's lots of steps and hoops that would have to be jump through before y'all could actually get to the point of authorizing the work.
Well, hey, this is Bob. I'm still on the phone, and I would agree with that. You do have to put together a bid package, and there's a process that we have to go through with public advertisement that takes about a month, and you kind of time that with the board meeting, and so it's not the end of the world, but it does take a little bit of time. It's not like you can tell Keith to go today and he can have somebody out there in 2 weeks doing this. We've got to publicly advertise it if it's over $75,000. So, but again, it's not a big deal. I mean, we do it every day. It's what we did with the water plant improvements, and so we know those traps. But I do agree with Keith and Eric as well, is that it's we've got a great hose pipe. There's just no big holes in there, and so I think that that lining in there does provide a good solid fix for 15 plus years. And no one's going to tell you 50 years or something, but if you really talk to somebody on the side, they'd probably say it's well beyond 15 years.
This is Neil. Are we going to re-televise before we do any work, or are we going to rely on the televising we did a few years ago?
Neil, I mean, and Bob, jump in here at any point if you'd like, but I anticipate that part of, I mean, any contractor is going to want to know what they're getting into, you know, before they're going to throw a hard number at, and they're going to want to know, you know, is there a bunch of, you know, because that hose pipe has to be as clean as it can be, right? So, I mean, if there's any sort of sand or sediment that's collected on the bottom of that pipe, I mean, we've got all that's going to need to be cleaned up before you could do anything. So what I don't know that we want to do is to go out and TV it today. I think the next step is,
is, and again, I'm not trying to wear the engineer hat and so Bob slap my hand here, you know, whenever, but to me, I think the next step would probably be to add an item to the agenda to authorize Bob to begin the design of, you know, of the job and to begin to prep it to be advertised.
And this is Neil again. If, for instance, we get a bid of $150,000 to do the cured in place pipe. Counting any additional costs related to televising, cleaning or jetting the pipe to get it ready for the work, as well as engineering, what additional costs are we looking at? On the order of what percentage of the entire project would be included in preliminary work?
I mean, I think, you know, the only, I mean, apart from you know, jetting, cleaning, and TVing the line, that's all kind of done simultaneously. And I don't know if there's a whole lot that would need to be done in preparation for work. Something that has to be considered, and you know, there was some money allocated to it in the bid that I received for that $150,000. Honestly, I don't know that it was sufficient. Because, again, 100% of our flow is conveyed to this line, and it's not like we're just right around the corner from Jackrabbit. And so, you know, to me, a very significant and key component to the job is going to be essentially bypass pumping, but I don't know that bypass pumping is actually a feasible solution here. And so it probably looks like having to pull sludge from the wet well and hauling it to the waste treatment plant, which, if you guys recall, we did that for a very short window during that emergency repair on that same line following Harvey. So, I mean, that stuff can get pretty costly pretty quick, but I think that, you know, that would just be part of the, you know, the scope of work that these folks would be bidding.
How long, this is Neil again, how long would we be on this, you know, just realizing that we're just kicking it around right now, but how long would we be on that hauling procedure? How long does it take for this project to happen?
I think, and Bob, again, feel free to jump in, but I think, you know, I think this is a, I mean, if this contractor's out there, you know, wet hauling more than 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I think something, you know, we've probably done something wrong.
I would agree with Keith, Neil, that because it's not like, you know, you don't have to start that hauling until he's actually out there and ready to go is the good news. And so, again, there's really, I would agree with Keith. It's 2 to 3 weeks probably is what we're looking at. But it's certainly, you know, and I think maybe Keith and I need to have a conversation with a contractor or a couple of contractors and dial in on that. But I would not expect it to be more than a couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, just like Keith said. Weather permitting. Now, if weather's bad and you know, if something happens out there, but, you know, the great thing about this process is, you know, you're not open cutting. So, you know, I'm not saying they can work in a torrential downpour, but you're not really flopping around in a bunch of mud. You're going manhole to manhole. And so it's pretty efficient just from a weather standpoint to a certain extent. But Keith is right. I mean, we're gonna have to haul, you know, given that this is a major trunk and you really can't bypass this thing at a feasible rate anyways.
And another component that's in your favor is that, you know, generally whenever you use the CIPP, you know, kind of the last step is you gotta send in essentially you have to recut all of the existing service connections. So if you did this in a residential, you know, if we did this in front of your home, we'd have to go behind once the line is in and recut where the service is tied to the main. This 18-inch line, there are no service connections. So you don't, you know, that process or that step is eliminated. So that, you know, that's certainly beneficial in terms of just number of days down. And really, Barry, I saw you look at me funny when I said 2 to 3 weeks. I think that's very conservative. I think what these contracts are going to want to do, they're going to look to bite off a chunk at a time that they can put in and cure, you know, in a short window. And so, you know, not all 1,600 linear feet is going to be in one fell swoop. You know, they'll probably bite this off, you know, manhole to manhole at a time and look to do it, you know, over a day or, you know, a day or two. Now, you know, how much time in there is actually liquid haul, you know, I don't know. And I agree with Bob, probably helpful to visit with some contractors and kind of pick their brain as to how they see that plan out.
This is Barry. Yeah, I did look at you because I was not expecting 2 to 3 weeks of hauling. I'm not familiar with this process, but I'd request that you and Bob reach out to some people that are familiar with this and kind of find out what the pace of installation or application is on a project like this.
Sure.
You know, do they do 50 feet a day or, you know, I would think that it'd be a pretty quick process given that it's a straight shot and there's no connections there.
Yes, sir. No, I don't disagree with you. I think kind of what I have in mind when I say, you know, two to three weeks is not that the line's going to be down and we're going to be hauling it for 2 to 3 weeks straight. I think that it's going to, you know, the entire job may be 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, but you know, how many days within those 14 to 21 is, you know, are you actually hauling sludge? So
does it, the cure out pretty quickly? I mean, how quickly can you, after operation, can you?
Yes, sir. No,
it
certainly cures quick. I mean, and keep in mind too that oftentimes this application is used also, and you know, for these emergency repairs. So you know, if you have a line that begin to fail, and I mean, you'd be surprised at some of the lines that they can actually still slip line, even as they begin to show signs of failure. And so yeah, I mean, the process is fairly quick. I mean, this isn't put it in there and it cures for, you know, a week or two. This isn't like putting down, you know, pavement on a public road that's got a cure, you know, set up and cure for doing a, you know, 14, 21 day break. So,
right. Okay.
If there's nothing else on that, just a couple of other items briefly.
I'd like to add just a couple things. Jane, I'd like to put this on the agenda. I'd like to formally put this on the agenda.
Brent. I have one comment on this. I'd like to put this into the asset management plan and compare this with all the other maintenance, long-term maintenance items that we have and see where it stacks up. I don't know that we've done that to know that this is the highest priority project we have. And I think I love the discussion, but we need to know that this, where this stacks up with our asset management plan.
Can you provide any kind of input on that right now, or is this something?
I need to look at that. Brent makes a good point. He makes a good point. So I will take a look at that and provide some feedback to you guys.
And I'd really like to have the asset management plan and those tasks that are on it. We can look at the top five, and that ought to be our agenda item, not a specific project that we, you know, kind of bypass the whole process.
Yeah, I agree, Brent. I mean, we've kind of, just with the water plant improvements going on, that the asset management plan hasn't been forgotten. We just haven't looked at it again. So it's a good point, Brent. So I'll revisit that and get back with you guys, and we can talk about it. I can send some stuff out before the meeting next month, but we can talk about it next month for sure.
Well, this is Barry. I don't disagree with Brent that we need to do that, but let's face it, guys, this is the primary sewer line. We can't afford to let it get in bad shape. It needs to be kept in. We can look at it with the other items that need to be addressed. But my goodness, this is a main line. And
I tell you quite honestly, that 12-inch force main between lift station 1 and the beginning of this line, I would think that may have higher risk than the 18-inch gravity.
It may. It's all the same, going to the same spot. It's always all a primary
outflow from our lift station. So I agree, we can check that as well.
It's a lot more difficult to check, but.
And a force main be televised?
It's not easy, but
it's tricky.
There are ways to inspect the condition of the force main, yes. And I can work with Bob to kind of begin to put, you know, piece together what that looks like.
So if you look at the consequences of a leak on the force main, it's crossing those waterways, and it may have a. I don't know. I just think we need to look at all the things on the same list and talk about the items on our asset management plan.
This is Derek. I agree with Brent. I think we should have a holistic view of the entire system and what has the biggest priority, because as I mentioned earlier, we have a aging system, and repairs and upgrades are going to have to be done. So I agree with Brent. I think Neil, that for next month, we should have a review of our overarching CIP, and let's see what has the highest priority.
Okay, the only thing that creates is it creates a backlog and a delay in any action that we might take, because keep in mind that we have operational issues and we've had a recommendation for several years to completely rehabilitate lift station number one. And that is something that was high up on the asset management plan, as I recall. That was like the next major project we were going to undertake. We can look at this from the standpoint of, taking a snapshot of all the infrastructure right now. However, if there's a failure in that line, in that gravity line leading to the wastewater treatment plant, it's going to be extremely problematic for us. With the state and with the EPA, perhaps. So it's fine that we look at the asset management plan, but I sure wouldn't want to put off any action, any proactive action, for 6 months or even longer. I think something needs to be done on the most pressing issues.
Well, Neil, to your point, can Keith bring in, if he and Bob talk to a couple firms about the entire process, expense, and time frame for both slip lining, and we also address that at the same time as looking at our overarching CIP next month. I mean, we can do both at the same time, right? Because, I'm not saying put off the slip lining 100%. They can still go look at time versus cost and bring that to the next board meeting, and we can kind of look at everything at the same time and not postpone, because we can't make the decision today to do it. So it would have to be at the next meeting at the earliest. So we're not delaying anything. We're just looking at everything at the same time. Or am I wrong? This is my first real big CIT minus the water plant.
Eric, this is Bob. I would agree with you. We can look at these simultaneously.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. We can do that, certainly.
Okay, because, I agree. I mean, if the gravity line fails and we have to do emergency repairs, that's going to cost us an astronomical amount of money in emergency repair versus doing these simultaneously and trying to get a better feel for where we are next month, which we can't make a decision until next month anyway. So I think we can do multiple things at the same time and both fulfill Brent's request and look at the gravity feed line and take a bigger snapshot picture of the overall CIP.
I don't recall Bob Wimpy or Keith, either one, saying that it's 18-inch, while it was something we need to look at, that having this urgency. I thought they said, and you guys are on the call. I thought it was like, yeah, we need to look at it, but there's no urgent response needed quickly.
Well, the last time they showed us the images going through the gravity feed line, the rebar was starting to be exposed. And that was, I think that was the biggest concern, is that the inner lining that faces the most of use was starting to fail, but it wasn't necessarily imminent failure, but we did see the rebar of the line being exposed. And that was, that to me, if I recall correctly, that is kind of what started to elevate the issue. But in terms of the bigger TIT picture, you know, we're weighing things, right? So where are we right now?
I want to add something too, and this goes back to a previous agenda item. If we are going to revisit the asset management plan and its priorities, we need a recommendation from the subcommittee in regards to the water plant control building project. We need that recommendation because we need to know what we learned from that project, and we need any kind of recommendations for action to be done prior to taking on any large-scale project. We can't keep putting that off because the subcommittee report, I don't want to put it off as, you know, half the time that it took to do the water plant project. I think the subcommittee report needs to happen, and it needs to happen next month. You talk about doing things concurrently. We need to do that concurrent with looking at the asset management plan. Because if we're going to undertake a large-scale project of any kind, we need that recommendation.
I agree.
So hopefully we'll keep that on the agenda for next month, and hopefully we'll have a recommendation from you guys next month as to what we need to do to either change things up or to move forward in another direction. But we need that direction from the subcommittee based on this experience before we move forward with any sizable project. Keith, did you have anything else?
Two other things, briefly. Just by way of update, there was discussions previously about the AT&T invoices and expense. As I mentioned in my email to you, Neil, Brent, and I have had some conversations about this over the last month or two, and the cell phone cards have been installed, and I did provide correspondence to Fran to pull the plug on the AT&T bills in an effort to save some money. And then the last item, I did receive an email and some correspondence from Catherine with the DVCA office, and Barry was involved. I believe he and I spoke about it previously, but there's a there was a sinkhole adjacent to a manhole off of Woodcomb. We did go out early this week and dye test that manhole. The dye test was positive, meaning that it showed up in the manhole, and so those repairs are scheduled, and we'll get that wrapped up and taken care of. And I believe that is all I have for you gentlemen this evening.
Well, don't we need to talk about the favorite subject of the Harris County flood control, 84-inch?
Yes, I'm sorry, Barry. I'm appreciate bringing that up. Two things in on that. One, Neil had asked, so previously, two months ago, maybe, we had put together a cost estimate to address, you know, the issues that we observed. One being the minor cracks kind of towards the top half of that, the barrel of that manhole, and then also addressing the reverse grade issue for that surface drain that flows into that same manhole. The cost estimate that we had provided was for $6,600 to complete the work. I did send out an email just prior to the meeting, and I apologize that it went out late per Neil's request to the board, as well as Eric, with the HOA for their, you know, for you all to review. Also, in relation to the dual 84-inch lines, Neil has since a email just asking that I begin to kind of give thought to how we might go about inspecting those two lines. You know, there's kind of two, given the size, there's kind of two options. We can TV it. I think that the cost of TV that size of line is going to be fairly sizable. The other option, given that it's an 84-inch line, we can actually walk the line. It's obviously, you know, confined space entry, and there's you know, lots of things to consider in doing that. But I mean, those are kind of the two methods that we could use to get a general idea as to the condition, understanding that, you know, walking an 84-inch main or even TVing it, you know, you know there may be some hairline cracks that may, you know, down the road create some depression or something like that, that, you know, may or may not be seen, but certainly something that we can discuss further if you guys would like.
This is Barry. I'd like to bring forth an item. Before we do anything, set foot in that drainage pipe, I really think we need to have legal address that to the Harris County Flood Control District in some form or fashion. I just don't think we should take it upon ourselves to do anything associated with that line until, I mean, I don't want them to come back and say because we're doing the work that we've taken responsibility for.
So, Barry, to that end, I had a call earlier this week with Matt Z, who's the number two at Flood Control, and because Eric Touré brought up that commission, and Mr. Z reached out to me, one, because I work for Harris County Engineering, but Mr. Touré went before Commissioner's Court, which sort of really kicked this off at a higher level. When you go before court, county does take the inquiries very seriously. And what Mr. Z came back and was telling, informed me on, was that yes, on all the plaques that we had received via the information request that the MUD had presented to Flood Control, we received all those plaques and the documentation, which showed that there was a public easement for the 84-inch lines. What Mr. Z had told me was that after the infrastructure was built, it was never conveyed to either the county or to Flood Control. And they are two separate entities. And that right now is the sticking point. And this is what needs to be addressed, is was the infrastructure ever
approved,
conveyed to a public entity? Flood Control is telling us via Harris County attorney that it was never conveyed, never accepted by the county, and this is the reason they are saying it is not under Flood Control or Harris County Engineering's responsibility. And that right there is the sticking point. Because it has held up for so many years, nobody ever questioned it, right? But now we're at a point where there's some subsidence and it's becoming questioned. And that is the legal standpoint of who owns this right now.
Well, Eric, my point, and I would bring this up to Mr. Zeev or whatever his name is, when Friendswood Development put this infrastructure in back in the 70s, there, you cannot tell me that they did not have to have Harris County out there approving of the addition of this. It had to have been approved. Bob, you're on the line. That would have been something that the plans would have had to have been approved by Harris County. And by doing so, I think they're taking responsibility for it. They take responsibility for the drainage easement in front of it upstream. They take responsibility for the drainage downstream. What the common sense says, you got to do the middle too. And I know they're trying to pass the buck is what they're trying to do. Shirk the responsibility. I just don't agree with that. And that letter from that attorney, and this is on the record, she is out and out wrong. That does drain public streets in Deerfield Village. And I'm incensed by her opinion about that.
And, you know, I don't speak on a legal matter for the county at all. I'm wearing my MUD hat and I agree with you.
Yeah.
So, but my only point is that Harris County attorney have taken a position that is not their responsibility. Right or wrong, that is their position as it stands right now. And this is where we need Dimitri to come in and do a lot of research into this to look back and find out what happened to determine ownership of this infrastructure. And that's my position, is that there's a legal matter involved, and that is what needs to be determined. And it's beyond the ability of our board to figure this out.
I agree. Yes.
This is Neil. I have actually suggested to Dimitri that we may want to at some point entertain a public information request of Harris County, including Harris County Engineer's Office, Harris County Flood Control, even the City of Houston Planning and Development Department, which approves subdivision plats in the extraterritorial jurisdiction, or even the Corps of Engineers. Because back in 1975 or so, when this subdivision was developed and those lines were laying, when those lines were put into Deerfield, those lines were sized so that they would drain the entire subdivision. And I brought this up. I brought it up to Bob. I brought it up to Dimitri. If as the county attorney says, the line only drains or serves the patio homes, that is patently false. It's not correct, because if the line was sized just to serve the patio homes, there may be a 36 or 48 inch line serving the patio homes, but you've got two 84 inch lines that take all of the water from the channel that serves Deerfield, over 1,000 homes, and all those public streets, and you're saying that it's the MUD's responsibility. And if that's, we need to include that in our asset management plan, it needs to become a depreciable asset, and it needs to be something that we look for in the future, because if there's a defect in that line, it's a problem for us financially.
Oh, Neil, and I agree with you, and the county attorney is just an opinion. It is not scripture. So, the county attorney has come out and stated to our MUD that this is what they believe is true, but it is still just an opinion. And this is why we need a lot more muscle into the research to determine ownership on this.
Right, but I don't want to get so caught. You know, we have a surface issue that is borderline affecting one of our residents and one of our property owners, the person at 3922 Heather Stage. I've been out there on several occasions. I went out there with Director Greer like maybe a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, whatever. There is a depression there, and I don't know if it's caused by a defect in the manhole. I don't know if it's caused by the square drainage ditch and a defect in the line that feeds the manhole. I don't know what it is, but MOC via Keith has come up with a relatively inexpensive fix for that area. It's probably close to cratering the resident's fence. Eric Toure, if you're on the call, you can speak to this as well. You know, we need to, at some point, exercise our good faith judgment and fix this for the resident and for the community, because it's also a public safety issue. And the 84-inch line, yes, that is something that we need to figure out, and we need to research it, and we should not just let Harris County run roughshod over us. But we need to take care of the surface issue.
I agree. I'm in a complete agreement. It's a problem, and it needs to be addressed. And unfortunately, with the age of the system that we have, you know, the symptoms are now becoming apparent. And it's only one, but to that one homeowner, it is a very prominent issue. For the MUD, if this is going to be passed off onto us, then it becomes a very large financial issue that we have not budgeted for. So this is something that we need muscle behind in order to determine ownership of the infrastructure. And I'm on the MUD side with this. I don't believe this is a MUD problem. I mean, there's no reason to have two 84-inch stormwater lines that are only serving the patio homes. That doesn't make any sense.
I mean, Keith, inform me again. You have never said that you thought that the depression at that area is caused to any great extent by infiltration into the manhole. Is that correct?
We've dye tested the manhole and there are evidences of, you know, small voids. If I showed you pictures of that dye test, which I think I did, and I showed you pictures of the dye test of the manhole we just recently did, you would see a very drastic difference. But I mean, there are voids. And so, you know, what degree or how much soil have we lost there? I don't know. Do I think that some soil has been lost? Yes. You know, if you go and look at that area, you know, what it appears like to me, I mean, that sidewalk that's immediately adjacent to that square drain, to me, it seems very apparent that sidewalk was some time ago mud jacked to be brought up. And so what it looks like to me is that whole area, for some time, a long time ago, began to depress, and the sidewalk and the surface drain and everything else began to move with it. The sidewalk issue was addressed, you know, and it was brought back to grade. The storm, the surface drain, everything else was untouched, and it sits where it sits. And so, you know, I think all of that combined is how we are where we are. And again, you know, that manhole wasn't mud jacked within the last couple of years. I mean, that was done some time ago, at least best as I can tell. And so I don't think that this is really a new issue, if you will. I think as best I can tell, there's been something that's resulted in that sidewalk to sink.
The question for me, and to kind of tie this up with a bow, the question for me is whether or not we can get assurance from Dimitri that if we take care of this surface-related issue, it is not by default our claiming ownership of the 84s underneath. If Dimitri can say the MUD in its good faith efforts is taking care of a primarily surface issue, if he can say that and give us that assurance that we're not assuming ownership of the 84s, I think we need to make the repair.
And Neil, this is Eric. Just a comment. I think you're on the right path because it is a public safety issue, which is the reason I got involved. And I was trying to push the right buttons to get the flood control to take responsibility. I was surprised to hear a couple of days ago the county attorney's opinion that they were not responsible due to private streets. And I'd like to appeal that in some way, but I also don't want to leave that dangerous situation out there the way it is. I also don't want to end up becoming responsible for it if we participate or handle it. So just that was my sense. Hopefully everybody can hear me.
Hi, Teddy, and this is Colleen Barra. I really recommend you go to Tom Ramsey, our county commissioner, to get help getting all those documents you want. Harris County is notorious for taking months and months and months to answer any open records requests. So if you will go directly to Tom Ramsey, have his office help you get those documents that you want from flood control, and whoever else, you're more likely to get them instead of having to go fight the Attorney General's office and everything else. They're really, really bad. And that attorney always says they're not responsible for anything and every topic. That's just always their reaction. So I wouldn't even worry about it. I just keep on going.
Yeah, I'm going to keep on going, Colleen, and you're right. Tom Ramsey was the first one to step up and raise his hand.
to let me help you. And then a couple other people called all the way to Eric Heppen. I was surprised to get this result. I was hoping to get a better result, but we'll keep the pressure on regardless, even if we decide to pick it.
Well, this is Barry. I think that's probably the county's first volley to us, and I think we need to make a strong comeback to them. That's just some falsehoods in that opinion, and that needs to be straightened out quickly.
Well, I'll raise my hand and I'll give Tom Ritz. Actually, I have his number now, so I'll join. Neil, I'll send you his number, and if we can just maybe partner together to make sure that he gets the message.
You want to try to get together a meeting with him, Eric?
I think I can do that.
Okay.
This is Adam. I'm hopefully for the possibility that this is as simple as conveying infrastructure to Harris County, whether that's from maybe we have, I hope we don't have to accept ownership before that happens to do it, but I'd like to ideally determine that Friendswood Development still owns it, and obviously they don't want anything to do with it, and somehow convince them to convey the infrastructure to Harris County.
Well, that is something that we've talked about, and Bob can possibly give us some insight on this. Bob, as far as approaching Harris County to see if under what circumstances the underground conveyance lines would be accepted by Harris County.
Neil, yeah, this is Bob. We'll make that request. It's going to be an uphill battle. I think it's pretty clear on the phone call here that we're not going to get a lot of help from either Harris County or Harris County Flood Control as far as them helping us resolve this. It's going to be a forced situation, and so I will make that request to them and verify it. But we're going to run into resistance. So I think we need to be pursuing other avenues as well.
Right, and I want to also agree with what Colleen just said about, I mean, there may be a political solution to this, and we may have to go to the commissioner's office and plead our case directly to them.
Well, I'll just say, Neil, this is Bob again. I'll just say it's not at an engineering level that this gets accepted. It's going to be political, and it's going to have to get elevated if anything gets accepted. So I would agree with that, but I will run our traps from the engineering side for sure.
Okay. So, Eric, Toure, if you can start that ball rolling as far as getting a meeting with the commissioner, I'd appreciate it, and I will certainly participate.
All right. Thank you. I'll do that.
This is Eric Worthington. I fully agree that pulling in Commissioner Ramsey into this is going to be critical.
And we need to make sure that he knows we're going to keep going at this, that we're not going away. It's too important.
And I will tell Jane, this is Neil, I will tell Jane as well that even though I talked with Dimitri, our attorney, on this this week, it may be important for him to give us a very solid reading as to whether or not we can go ahead and make this primarily surface fix and undertake this without admitting ownership or maintenance responsibility for those 84-inch lines. We need to have a very solid basis for doing this, because if we get that solid approval from Dimitri, then I think that we owe it to the community as well as the neighbor adjacent to this area to go ahead and fix it.
Jane, I can definitely.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you, Jane.
Okay, I think we've beaten to death the operations report without actually approving anything. Keith, do you have anything else?
No, sir.
There, I had one comment going back to your public information or the open records. If you contact the Attorney General's Office, Open Governments Division, they have half of it is just open records. They're the ones who provide the training across the state for everybody on open records. They might have already summarized all this for you. The graduate, they'll include it in their booklet. So contacting them might be the fastest and easiest place for you guys to understand it. Plus, it might also be something they need to offer training across the state to every mud and water board on whatever the new laws are. And they offer the best training there is. Back to you.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, getting back to operations, do we have a motion to approve?
This is Barry. I'll make a motion. We approve the operations report.
This is Eric. I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. I believe that Brent Phelps had to leave the meeting. Brent, are you still there?
I'm still here, but I do have to leave after this vote.
Okay. All right. So we have a motion and second. Any discussion on operations? Okay. Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call the roll. Director Polanski votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps?
Yes.
Adam Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries. Thank you. And thank you, Keith. Thank you, Bob. Okay, number 11, report on West Harris County monthly meeting and related service and construction issues and the 84-inch water line through the district. I don't know, Eric Worthington, you brought up some of this. You reported a little bit at the beginning of the meeting before I think we formally started. Do you want to put a bow on it, summarize what you got from the West Harris County meeting?
Yes. Basically, I went in to express my displeasure at the lack of planning on behalf of RCRA's contractor. They should have started at Winsong and moved west. Instead, they started at Parker Cypress and moved east. The end of this is they are behind schedule. Precinct 3 has rebuilt Winsong Road. I live on the road, and I'm very well aware of their progress on a daily basis. They will be completing their road before WICRA gets their line installed, so they will be partially open cutting the road, is what I was told last night. I don't know how far into the brand new road they're going to destroy to put their line in. It remains to be seen. They will impact the beginning of Wilson Elementary school opening. It was not explicitly stated other than the fact that they are talking to the school or the school district. I don't really believe them, and I think August and early September is going to be a mess. So basically, I expressed my displeasure at their planning processes, and they knew some hard deadlines, and they didn't plan far enough in advance. So it's going to be a bit of a mess. Now, I can tell you that once they open cut Winsong Road, when they repair it, that is into a one-year warranty period. So if that road fails or is not absolutely perfect, we can go back to Precinct 3 and Mr. Heppen and file some complaints and make sure that the county puts pressure on them to rebuild the road so that it is in the condition as they found it, which would be brand new. I can guarantee you I'm going to be on top of this. And Mr. Polanski was also in the meeting, and he backed my opinions, and I am grateful for that. They paid us lip service, and they moved on. So we had about 3.5 minutes of discussion, and it was back to their regular 45-minute, hour-long meeting, and that's about it.
And I'll just add to that I did attend the meeting, and I brought to their attention that we were displeased at the fact that there was so little coordination between Harris County Precinct 3 Roads Department and West Harris County. that the roads department completely went through and or did a reconstruction of Windsong Trail before West Harris County is doing open cut. And I said, and I told the commissioner last night on this meeting, I said, this is a horrific waste of taxpayer dollars to do a brand new road and then open cut it for an 84-inch water line. And they moved on from there. So if you want a really good example of government waste and lack of coordination among entities, look no further than Harris County and the West Harris County Regional Water Authority. It was a real display.
Well, Neil, to that end, and this is something we had discussed before, is that in the initial talks between the three entities and MUD 136 and Deerfield Village HOA, we're outsiders on this. This is not our project. But we were engaged to make sure that all the parties were talking to each other. And one of the big issues that came up, and this came up in talking with Eric Heppen, it was great that there's three Erics involved now, but Mr. Heppen, when I reached out to him to let them know when we discovered that Windsong Trail was going to be open cut, he had the same reaction that you and I had, was that RCRA initially stated, or their contractor stated, that just like Barker Cypress, Windsong Trail would be tunneled under. And that was what was discussed, and the assumption was it was true. There was a failure at some point, because they told us one thing, and then they filed for a permit to open cut Windsong, and the Harris County Engineer Project Manager dropped the ball. And so when we came back and let them know that Windsong was going to be open cut after the brand new road was built, Precinct 3 was surprised, because that's not what they were told, but Harris County Engineer's Project Manager didn't check the permit. So there was a disconnect in there, and where the fault lies is definitely within Harris County, and that's kind of where we're at right now. So we were told one thing, they pulled a permit for something else, and a brand new road's going to be open cut. So the fault of this is on Harris County for not double checking to make sure, but the precinct was not informed by their contractor that they had changed their plans, and knowing that the road was going to be rebuilt and knowing the August 23rd opening for Wilson Elementary, they're way behind schedule. So they pushed up against the deadlines and they failed. And they failed multiple times, but it's multiple layers of failure involved here. And it's disappointing all around.
Okay, and two updates about the pipeline that they're putting in. One, they appear to be on schedule, hopefully, to open Tarnbrook by about around August 20th. That could slide, but that's what they're talking about, and they talked about in the most recent meeting a couple days ago that I attended, that Barry and I attended. So they're talking about August 20 as possibly being a date for opening Tarnbrook. The other thing is that they are nowhere near complete enough on the eastern end of the pipeline to open up that area for pedestrian access to and from Wilson Elementary School from Deerfield. And they are printing up 30 or 40 signs that have contact information that say it's closed until pedestrian access from Deerfield to Wilson Elementary is going to be closed until the end of October. So that's the current thinking from West Harris County on this project.
Well, it wasn't the end of October, was it? The end of September.
They said September, but then they sent me the mock-up of the signs that they're going to do, and the signs said October.
So real quick, this is Eric Worthington. I think that MUD 136, in cooperation with Deerfield Village, HOA with Eric Touré, we should put a letter together and send it to Precinct 3 and make our displeasure known a little bit more formally. this is just wrong. They knew and they started at the wrong end because there's no pipeline to the east and there's no pipeline to the west. So they could have started at Windsong and gone west, but they didn't. But we, it's shouting into the hurricane, right? What are you going to do? But we do need to do a joint letter between our entities and send it to Precinct 3. And it may be shouting into the wind, but I still think it needs to be done. This is not a MUD project. It's not an HOA project. But we're the only ones keeping tabs because we're the only ones impacted by it.
Well, let me we could keep talking about this forever. The issue that I don't want to expend political capital on that project when we've got the one that potentially has a huge financial impact on the MUD, and that is the 84 is under the patio home. I think if we're going to have a meeting with the commissioner's court, with the Precinct 3 commissioner, we need to talk to him about that issue, and if the issue of coordination with West Harris County comes up, it comes up. But the issue under the patio homes is one that we really need to nail down. And if we're going to expend political capital, I want to do it on that. That's my personal opinion.
Neil, this is Glenn. I was thinking the exact same thing after listening to what you guys went through for the last 40 minutes about that piece. As much as I agree with Eric, I'd love to send that letter and do that. I think you need more from them to help us fix the problem.
Well, and that doesn't stop individuals from writing their own letters talking about the problem. I know I plan to write them at least I think they should at least reimburse Cypher ISD for running a bus through Deerfield because there's not an easy way to walk to the elementary anymore. I think a bus needs to be running through Deerfield to take kids down Biker Cypress to Keith Arrow. I think West Harris County needs to reimburse the school district for, but that will be done personally on my own time and effort.
Well, I agree. I agree that that's a grand idea for many of the residents to complain about it. But I think for the MUD and the HOA, I agree with Neil that politically, pick your battles.
This is Colleen Bear. I suggested in the newsletter or in y'all section that you give the address where people and the person that people in the neighborhood can write to if they have any concerns. So that way you're not actually telling them to write, but they'll get to you. And if they get enough letters, they might start paying attention.
Well, we can always put in Mike Thornhill's name and contact information on the WICRA because he is our representative in our area. So he would be the first person that we, if we're complaining to WICRA, it would be him. And it's not only just Deerfield Village, it's all the surrounding subdivisions that use Windsong and potentially access or feed into the elementary school.
Okay. All right. I hate to move it along, but I'm going to move it along. I think we've talked that one. Let's go to agenda item number 12, discuss the district website. Adam, do you have anything for us?
A couple minor things on the website. Brent let me know that the contact information for Texas Pride wasn't all that great, so I added the phone numbers for them in a couple areas. On the minutes from June, those have been corrected on the website now. I still need to get Jane the contract from the text message service. That's all I have on the website.
Okay. And as far as the text message notification system, is there anything, any news on that?
We've got, I just want to let y'all know, the first month we had 100 new subscribers. Now this month we've had 25 subscribers, so maybe a little lower numbers than I thought, but I'm sure until a hurricane hits the Gulf and starts heading this direction, you may not have a lot of subscribers. But that's just basically an update that I think we're up to 125 subscribers now.
I think you're right on that. If we get a hurricane in the middle of the Gulf or it starts looking like it's coming toward us, we put in a next door post and we do an e-blast through Deerfield, and we'll get a whole bunch of people subscribing to it. Recycling event. Eric, any news on that?
We need to vote on it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, do we have a, do we have an actual, have you provided a game plan to us?
Yes, we have a date and cost. I sent that out via email. I missed the agenda for last month, but they're waiting on us to approve it so we can formalize the date. The cost is a little bit higher than the previous year, but we're ready to go. We just need to approve it, and that's it.
Remind me, what's the cost, the total cost to the district?
Hold on, let me go back.
This is Barry. I don't remember getting anything.
No, I brought it up in the meeting, but I did not send out an email to the directors on that.
Okay, so Jane, would this take a resolution of the board? Something like this for us to participate in or to run a e-cycling event?
I mean, if you guys are approving cost in a contract, it would just be good to have a motion on record for that amount.
Say that again?
Sorry, if you guys are approving a certain cost for an event, it would be good to have a motion on record for that approval.
Eric Worthington, can you tell us, is it going to be under $10,000?
Oh, yes. So I'm looking at the email from Maria Lou. This was dated July 7th. Oh, wait, this is 2020. Whoops, hold on.
Are contracts awaiting our signature on this?
Well, I didn't draw up I don't think I dropped the ball, but I don't think there was a formal contract. It's part of our existing contract for a special event. They never sent me an actual contract that needed to be signed.
Okay. Jane, this is Barry. What do you recall what we've done in the past years?
Okay. I can take a look at the notes.
I have actual numbers. So this is her from Maria Lou from CompuCycle, dated June 11, 2021. It says the collection fee for the recycle event is $950. In addition to the collection fee, there is a 25 cents per pound fee to shred and recycle products domestically. And the sticking point was they required a credit card to be on file, but the district does not have a credit card. And that's what threw things into a little bit of a loop. And I replied back that in the past, it was just billed to us. And she confirmed at a later date. That would be acceptable because we had an existing contract. So at the end, the fee is $950 and 25 cents per pound fee to shred and recycle products domestically. That is what I have been told.
How about the cost for shredding, the actual shredding event? Not e-cycling, paper shredding.
That's 25 cents per pound.
Yep. That's the 25 cents a pound?
Yes. It's 25 cents per pound fee to shred and recycle products domestically.
Okay. So are we executing contracts?
Well, we don't have a contract. It's my understanding that
we have an agreement. I mean, what is it that we have on paper that allows us to spend the money on this?
Oh, I just have an email.
Why aren't you?
But I don't remember the last time I set this up. I don't remember that they actually had to submit us a contract for it. It was part of our existing, it was an agreement as part of our existing contract. Because it's a service they provide as part of our contract with additional fees.
Shane, can we do a resolution to approve the board's participation in the e-cycle and shredding event and give the president or our designated person the ability to execute an agreement not to exceed X amount of dollars?
Yes.
Why don't we do that? And then Eric Worthington can run all the hoops on that. And if it comes out to be, you know, if there's going to be a certain upfront charge and then there's going to be a per pound charge. And so, you know, I would say use last year's total cost as sort of a guideline as to what it's going to cost this year.
Right. Because with last year, with people being at home, the assumption was it was a banner year, which just meant everybody was at home emptying out everything that they've had. So I would expect this year to be less in total tonnage because the homes have been cleared out last year.
Well, let's see if we can get a figure on what we spent last year.
All right, I'll look into it.
And then use that as an estimate for this year, and let's do a resolution that gives the president authority to execute an agreement not to exceed, say, $5,000.
Okay. What did we agree to was October 23rd, as far as the date.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. So we still have one more session to approve this.
That's fine, as long as the vendor is okay with us waiting until September to do it. I mean, that's
all right,
1 month in advance.
All right, I'll email Maria today.
Okay. And if we need something, so Jane, I guess we just do a resolution, give or take what I just said.
The vendors already put us on their website because somebody emailed the general contact information on the website asking if 31-inch TVs or something are accepted as electronics recycling. So.
Okay. I mean, we filled up a 30 or a 40-yard container last year with just e-cycling. So Jane, we need to have a resolution on that?
I mean, you guys can take a motion on it whenever you're ready.
Okay, do I have a motion to approve our participation in the e-cycling and shredding event on October 23rd and give the president the ability to execute an agreement not to exceed $5,000. And it may
this
be
is,
quite a bit less than that.
This is Barry, so moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Any discussion? Okay, I'll take a roll. Director Blank, you votes yes. Barry Greer?
Yes.
Brent Phelps is not here. Anna Rodriguez?
Yes.
Eric Worthington?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries 4-0. Thank you. Article from the newsletter. Adam, can you do that again? Barry's still having some difficulty typing.
Yeah.
Barry, you want to take it back or you want to let Adam do it?
Next month, I'll take it back. I think I'll be better in 4 weeks.
Okay. Thank you, Adam, for taking that on. Agenda item number 16, discuss meeting format and take appropriate action. I don't know that there's too much to discuss on this. The edict has gone down that September 1st we can no longer do purely virtual meetings. I have already contacted the DVCA office asking them, kind of notifying them and asking them that if we can resume in-person meetings and reserve the clubhouse for us. The only decision that really needs to be made is whether or not we're going to do a hybrid. Dimitri has told me that for us to meet in person, there is no requirement whatsoever to do any electronic phone-in or video. We can go totally old school with our meetings if we choose that option. However, if the board is comfortable with doing it, and he also said that doing an audio transcript of a meeting, of an in-person meeting, is not required as well. However, if we're going to do a hybrid of any sort, I think we need to basically come to that conclusion at this meeting so that we can prepare for September. Thoughts?
I did meet with Eric T. from the DBCA, and he got me set up on the video conference system. So we are capable of doing, at least technologically, we are capable of doing a hybrid meeting in person with a video component.
This is Barry. I think we ought to move forward that way for this first meeting.
Which way, TB?
Well, with the video conferencing and audio, at least for this first meeting. Kind of a transition, I think.
Hey, Neil, and I'm not sure you want my input, but this is Glenn. Just this COVID, the D strain and Lambda or whatever is coming down the road, I think I heard some of the consultants say that, you know, I guess the impact is what happens if people can't make it in person? If you go to a full in-person meeting and key players can't make it, then you don't get to have a meeting, correct?
Well, this is all what we're trying to figure out, Glenn.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying. So I think you have to factor in the fact that people could have been near someone there who had COVID or get a positive test and are quarantining for 10 days. I mean, I'm hearing more people getting COVID now than I was a year ago.
Well, my opinion on this is that we should have phone-ins without video. But if the board wants to do, in-person is going to happen, so that part is a given. Whether or not we do video and phone-in or, you know, basically doing a Zoom as well as the in-person meeting, I don't know. I think we do have the ability to do just phone-in, and that's what I would suggest. But if the board wishes to do the video component as well, Adam says he's up to speed on it.
This is Barry. No, I'm just concerned that we transition and we have the ability for people that are not there in person to either listen in or make comments. It doesn't have to be video. Over.
Barry, this is Eric. We've gone to in-person meetings and we talked about when I post the agenda for the August meeting, that we have an optional call-in number, so that people that are concerned can still attend. At least.
Is it just Eric? Is it just call-in, or is it video as well?
We could do video. It's the same. We're using the conference call. So the video and the audio, it makes no difference to us whether we enable both. Adam, you saw the technology. It just sits on the table. It's got a 360-degree eye, and it kind of zooms in on anybody that's talking. It's not perfect, but at least it helps with audio tremendously.
And this is Jane. To have the audio and video option, I would just like to note that for that option, we would still have to have a physical quorum of the directors at your typical meeting location. And if you just want to do audio, you would still, like on the agenda, we would still post the physical meeting location, and someone would have to set up a two-way communication at that location, so that if anybody from the public went, they'd be able to hear the meeting. Just wanted to point that out, that it won't be like completely virtual Yeah, there's still be a meeting.
Right. Well, it's my understanding that the intent of the legislation or doing away with the legislation, whatever, is that the meetings are going to happen physically, and we should have the ability to communicate with people, and people can communicate with us either telephonically or video or both. I think it would be simple if we didn't have to look at a screen, to tell you the truth. I think it's going to be enough of a logistical challenge for us to take call-ins. And I think people can effectively, I mean, we've got several people on this call, on this meeting, who just called in, and we didn't see them from a video standpoint. So that, like I said, that's my recommendation, that we meet in person and we just have a conference call number. That's what I would suggest.
Neil, I'm just looking at what your attorney sent to you out there, and it says about meeting options. And if I'm reading this right, and maybe somebody can clarify it, but if I'm reading this right, you have two options. The video conference option, we talked about, but it says that the telephonic meeting is only during an emergency, if an emergency or public necessity must exist and a convening at one location of a quorum of the board is difficult or impossible. So it sounds like just doing it telephonic may not meet the requirements, but I'm just reading what was put out there in your documents for this meeting.
We'll get additional clarification from our attorney on this.
I mean, obviously,
Jane, see if you can talk with Dimitri and get some clarification as to whether a telephonic meeting with a quorum of physical directors is suffice. Okay, so that's what we're going to do at the next meeting. We can do a complete physical as well as a Zoom meeting for this first one, as Barry suggested, and then we can go from there. Is that what the board would like to do?
Yeah, that's me.
All right, Jane, that's what we're going to do. We're going to meet in person on, I believe, the 9th, maybe. And then we'll do a Zoom-type meeting as well, and we'll coordinate it that way.
And to clarify for Zoom, are you just talking about solely the audio or the audio and visual? Because
audio and visual.
I will caveat that for everybody, if we do that option, has to be visible. Everybody would have to have their cameras on and be visible in the meeting room as well. Anybody that
personally
would have to have a camera.
Oh. So
that can be problematic.
Yeah.
Are you saying that people could not just call in?
They could, but it would be under the option where we deem it that emergency exists during an epidemic. And that way you just have the phone option. If you wanted to do full-on Zoom with video capabilities and where you don't declare an emergency or anything,
right?
Everybody would have to have video capabilities.
What do you mean everybody?
Everybody at the meeting, so directors, consultants, anybody that, residents, anyone that joins the meeting has to have their video on.
Well, that's not what we're doing now.
Really? That's not what we're doing now.
Right, but because those certain suspensions are going to be lifted after September 1st. Well, after those are lifted, we have these two options.
My concern is that even though we have a 360 video,
mm-hmm.
It's not, you kind of see everybody, but you're not focusing on a particular director unless they're talking. And you would have to call a resident to come up to maybe an area where they're caught on video, where they're visible.
I think your system probably could meet the rules. I think the concern will be is does everybody have capability to Zoom? Other people who are trying to call in.
That's calling in is required too? Okay.
Yes, I believe that's what I heard.
But calling in is not required at all. We can meet.
No, if you do call in, you
we can meet in a physical meeting with no call-ins whatsoever.
Right, which is.
Yes.
Go ahead, Glenn.
If you do have a teleconference or a video function, everyone who is calling in has to be visible. I believe, Jane, that's what you said, right?
Which is different than the way it is now, but.
Which is different than the way it is now because you guys can't see me.
Right, and this is probably why Jackrabbit has gone back to 100% pre-COVID conditions, and they're not dealing with any technological considerations, just because it's honestly the simplest thing to do.
Well, so when you're trying to make it an effort to have people join in, they're going to make it difficult.
Okay. All right. Well,
it doesn't totally make sense, does it?
Exactly. Well,
okay. Okay, I don't know how you handle somebody who calls in and they're on camera and then they turn their camera off and they walk away for a while. I mean, what do you ticket them or something? I'm being facetious, of course. Should we just go old school for this first meeting?
This is Barry. After hearing all this conversation and what Jane said, I think we should just go old school. Everybody, the consultants have to be there, and public, if they want to be part of it, they have to be there. Let's do it that way.
I mean, it puts us at the least risk for potential lawsuits if we go to the lowest common denominator, which is how things used to be. And I hate to say that, but if we screw up in one small aspect, then we open ourselves up. And I think that's why Jackrabbit has done exactly what they're doing now.
I don't disagree with that. The only thing I think the risk that you guys have is if somebody who's a key member who's supposed to be there has COVID and can't show up.
Well, we've dealt in the past when we were doing 100% physical meetings where somebody didn't show up. And they provided us with their report ahead of time, or they phoned it in, or something like that. So, I'm not totally concerned with that. And again, this is the first meeting after September 1st. We may do it totally in person with no phone in or call in or whatsoever. We may do it in September and decide, we really need to have the public being able to get to us via video, and we may change it for October. So I think probably the best way to go, and I'm seeing a lot of people nodding here, is to go completely old school in September.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. That's what we're going to do. Jane, can you pass the word? Jane, we're going to go old school.
And Adam just put a note on the website that for at least the first meeting back, barring any changes from the governor, that this is kind of what we are, this is our only option.
And if you don't like it, contact your state representative.
True. Okay. All right. I think we have the agenda items for the next meeting. Next meeting will be in person. Eric Toure, if there's going to be any changes to the masking, if the DVCA has any mask requirements for the rec center, you'll let us know?
Yes, I will.
Because you're a private entity, you're not a government entity, so you can decide use your facility are masked.
We still are encouraging the public to wear a mask, but it's not required.
Okay.
If they're vaccinated.
Okay.
Of course, we're not checking cards either.
Okay. All right. Next month in person.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your attendance tonight. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again.
Good night.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a good.